Do you ever look for a successful professional and think, damn, how the hell did they get there? Like, did they unlock some secret level that I missed? Spoiler, they didn't. They're just as human as me and you, figuring it out one step at a time. That's precisely what we're all about. Oh yeah, I almost forgot. I'm your host, Caleb McCartney. Good to meet you. Every Friday, roughly sometime in the week, we'll be putting out a new podcast episode with your favorite professional, or maybe you don't even know them. And I'm going to grab a cup of coffee with them, or tea, or decaf if they really want to be a madman. And we talk careers, industry insights, real life that they will not teach you in school. No corporate fluff, no intimidating LinkedIn nonsense, just genuine, unfiltered conversations that might help you where you want to be. So let's get started. I'm here with my guest,
Shelby Long.
good to meet you, Shelby. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to have a conversation.
So what where did you start in your career? Introduce a little bit about yourself and tell everyone else what's so interesting.
How much time do we have? Because that might take a while.
Good.
I'll give you the broad overview, and then you can ask me more questions in between. I'm a communication consultant, business consultant. I'm primarily what I would call what I do is a brand strategist, which is how your brand and how your business best connects with your target audience. And we do that in a few different ways through speaking, through your marketing, through all of your influence, but it's how your brand is going to show up in the marketplace. And I have lots of affiliations around me, so it's not just me in business. It's a very important lesson to learn in business. Don't do it alone. You can do it alone, but it's really, really hard to do it alone. And you should be focusing on your genius and your expertise. I've been in that space of being a business consultant for probably about 5 years, but in the career that I had before that influenced the communication consulting, I was a communication professor at the college level for 18 years, part-time in my last 3 years at the college, 3, 4 years at the college, because I was building business. But then what influenced me to get into that was college debate, and which seems kind of like a nerdy background, but really, college debate probably prepared me the most for being an entrepreneur and an author and a thought leader, because you've got to be ready to get in a new environment and adapt and move and pivot and shift and always be responsive to what's happening, because that's what entrepreneurship is all about. So yeah, my 18 years as a college professor in communication helped me build my brand and introduce what I have to offer into the marketplace. So that's kind of an overview.
Yeah, let's get into that. First off, starting off, you obviously didn't just jump into college when you were 18, or at least teaching college at 18. What really got you interested in this idea of communicating and coming from high school? What was your journey like? From what I'm aware, I watched a little bit of your TED Talk. Work me through that.
I always liked school, and I knew I was going to go to college. I didn't when I when I started college, I wanted to be a lawyer, because I and I which is interesting, but not so interesting, because I've always been involved with debate and speaking, and I was a student council president, and I was on the college or on the high school debate team, and I was always involved in the speaking youth legislature. I was involved in that, so I knew I was going to go to college. And then when I went to college, that was debate is really what brought me into college, because I went to the college where I had an offer to be on the debate team, which was Carroll College here in Montana, and I'm still in Montana, so kind of interesting connection there. But yeah, I enjoy being on the team. But when, as you know, you're a college student and you're influenced by where you spend the most time. And I as any college athlete or college activity, it's a lot of time of practice, and it's a whole community, and we traveled together. We traveled all over the US to compete, and we spent a lot of time together. So that had a big influence on me. When I graduated from college, I decided that I wanted to continue working in the college debate world. I liked it a lot. Great community, really influential, and it was really fun, and I wanted to teach it. And so that's what influenced me to be a college professor, so I could teach it and run a debate team. And then that's what I did for 18 years. And I ran a college debate team. I taught classes. I had the opportunity to travel all over the U.S. and world with my debate team. I built programs. Very fun space to be in. So yeah, that's kind of what got me into the space. But then I felt kind of a limit, and I was ready to do something else with my knowledge and my expertise. And that's when I started the path of getting into consulting.
And when we get into the world of like big business and firms or thing, you know, works that you are working in, how do you go about like that going at that head on when you were starting out? I mean, I presume that a lot of failure was going to happen.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a interesting transition because often, you know, being a college professor, I speak and I teach and I test and I'm the expert in the room and I dictate the class. I plan the class. I do all the exam. I do all of those things. And then when I decided to get into corporate and move into the business world, I was in groups of entrepreneurs and I went to the Chamber of Commerce and I did all these things. And then I wasn't used to people asking me what I did or what I do in businesses because I hadn't really done that yet. And so it was I've always been a teacher of communication, not a consultant of communication, because a consultant helps you as the audience use communication to transform your work environment, to have a higher return on investment, to make your business better. And that's a different frame than teaching something and having you learn it, regurgitate it, and that kind of stuff. So it's a different way of communicating. And that was probably my biggest challenge, was moving from a classroom environment where I give a lot of information to an environment where I give the information and then tell them how to use it. So it was a different, very different way of communicating. And I think that was one of my most important lessons when I started running seminars in corporate and in banks and wherever, is that I had to really put the monetary value to it. Like, what is this information worth to you? Why should you pay attention to it? It's a different type of persuasion. When I'm a college professor, I'm standing in front of a class, I don't have to tell you that if you don't write down this information or learn this information, it's going to be problematic for your test. But I have to persuade in a different way in the corporate environment. So it was a tough lesson to learn. The other thing is, like, in a college classroom, I love speaking. I have no problem speaking for a whole hour, you know, give me 90 minutes. I can fill it, no problem. They don't have that kind of time in businesses. You got to focus things and be much more direct and engaged. And they don't want to just sit there and listen to a PowerPoint, or a lot of consultants do that. But it's, you know, I want to be active. And I've always been that way in the classroom. I taught public speaking and small group communication. So I was always very active with it. And taking that to the business environment was different. So there was a big learning curve, even though you're an expert in one space, and taking that expertise and transforming it to another space. You got to figure out what that gap is and how you can speak to an audience in a language that means something to them. So.
And I value the classroom a lot. It is something that I'm starting to kind of walk away from and go, I'm jumping into those experiences. And I'm sure many other colleagues and other people my age, you know, 18 to 20 or mid 20s, they're jumping into these opportunities because I think that we are moving towards a kinesthetic learning practice than it is all, you know. I think we are moving away from this books only approach, and it should be, we have to do it to learn it, because we are learning more about the neurodivergency of being able to pick it up on spot, on, you know, doing it to process through that. And I'd love to see, as from your perspective as a professor, what are your, with what you've already gone through in your teaching and learning, how have you seen the classroom change from a college dynamic, from all the time that you've taught?
Well, over the time that I taught, I think that the dynamic changes with the generations too. It's like teaching millennials is different than teaching, you know, people in the alpha generation and teaching people that are in the Gen X and Gen Z and, you know, pick your acronym. But the environment is so different because it's all about what I've seen is that there's a different way to problem solve. And I see that, you know, the people that are more in my generation, which is the older millennials and the younger Gen Xers, then, you know, we didn't have the internet growing up. We didn't have a phone in our hand when we were growing up. I didn't have Google Maps to tell me where to go somewhere, right? Like, I would never drive through. I was in Las Vegas this last weekend. I would never drive in a city anywhere without the Google Maps in front of me. Tell me where. And so, I mean, we didn't have that. And so it's, you just learn different ways of problem solving. And I think that's different in the millennials because the millennial generation, you know, they had the phone. They didn't have all of the capabilities of it, but it's like they didn't grow up with a phone in their hand, but like the Gen Zs that grew up with a phone in their hand. And I have younger kids too. I've got a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old kid. And when I was their age, I was, you know, running around the dirt and they're doing that too, but they have phones and it's just kind of a weird, it's just a different generation. But I think that having access to that immediate problem solving and not having to think through things or put things together logically, that's a skill that you are taught and you're taught how to solve problems. You're taught how to get answers. I really saw that transition during my time at the college because there's just a different way of doing it. I made my students write in glue books to take their exams because I don't think that's taught very much anymore, right? And so, but that is a different way of processing when you write things. It's a different way of remembering and processing and telling the story about it. So, yeah, I think that was the big change that I saw. I'm no longer at the college, but I think the next big switch is going to be what's happening with AI. Because AI is, I am glad I'm not a college professor and having to check all those papers against software for what's AI created, because I think it's going to be a challenge and it'll transform the way that we think and it'll transform the way that we learn. So it'll be interesting to see what that does.
Oh, I definitely want to talk on AI as well, but you mentioned kind of like how much of a reliance, at least my generation, I mean, I think we've all collectively been more reliant on technology. Cause like, I don't go out of my way to go to the library as much. I can do it all at home. And that is a good thing, but it's also a bad thing because then you have manipulation. You know, there's all the other cons that come with technology. So it's especially in an education setting, because like, you know, in the same right, you know, we have AI, and while it's good and it can be used as a tool, it cannot do everything for us. And it's similar to, you know, computers. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, I can do everything on it. It's like, well, you can, but there's a limitation. And my curiosity would be like, how, I don't know what it's like growing up without technology. But I had like, at a certain point, I had those projectors where it was a physical projector where it bounced off of the thing. You would have a laminate paper and it would bounce off the mirror onto the board. I can't go back and experience that because we don't have that anymore. So I wonder how different in terms of a social manner, the education system and how kids are learning. Would you say that it's going in a good direction, or what's your point of view?
I mean, the qualification of good or bad is there's no judgment about that. I think it's going in a direction where we're not coming back from it. So it's we've got to either adapt to it and figure out how to adapt to it and figure out how businesses engage and figure out how we market, figure out how we how we talk to people. You know, I don't think there's any question that in the past, this, and this is not your fault because it's your generation, it's technology, but this interpersonal communication that I think everybody can recognize that that's something that is challenging for people. I think it's all where there's always been some like hesitancy for interpersonal communication and public speaking and working in small groups. And maybe I'm surrounded by professional speakers. So those people aren't scared of speaking at all. It's hard to get a word in edgewise. But I think that's going to be the new currency is going to be the people that can actually communicate and communicate well, not using AI. And you speaking is the most genuine and authentic way to do that. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think there are a lot of really good things about it. You know, I like the way that it can make things sound better, right? And I can ask it to make a marketing post and it does. That's great. It makes my job easier and more efficient. But we do run into some challenges. There's pros and cons to it all, and we have to balance the good with the bad. So, but the thing that happens it happens with any industrial revolution, right? Like, look back to when we started assembly lines and we had cars produced on assembly lines. That eliminated a lot of jobs, right? Because we had machines doing some of the work. And so either you lost your job or you had to pivot and adapt and do it in a different way. The same thing happened when the internet, or like, I remember when email was a big thing, you know? So it's like the same thing happened when phone lines went in like that. There's some losses to it, but there's a whole lot of benefits. So I think once that balance kind of levels out, I think it'll be interesting, because it is a form of industrial revolution that we're going through right now, with AI having so much prominence in our lives and so accessible. So
I think
it's not accessible to everybody, though. It's accessible to people that have the resources to have that. Not everybody has the resources to have that. So
I think you are touching on a subject that I value is authenticity. And I think that they're in a world that is dominated by us interacting with each other over a cell phone frequency, over these Wi-Fi signals and the internet. We have, my generation and a lot of younger generations has become almost this antisocial, you know, we are striving to connect and connect with professionals, but some of us don't know how to do that. And it's so difficult to where it's like, we're hesitant because all that we've experienced online previously may have been bad or good or whatever it is. So we let that shape us in a way that we're hesitant to reach out to someone far more intimidating that has these successes, that has been through all this. What are some advices that you would give to those that would benefit from going out and talking to anyone that they might be interested in?
I think before I answer the question, though, I'm going to talk about COVID and what COVID did to us too, because COVID, I think, is another generational, I don't know if it's a generational thing, but that's an enormous worldwide event that happened that created that social distancing. And I don't know if we're coming back from that. I don't know if we are back from that, but that contributes to this whole, I can do things on my own. And so anyway, I think that's a really interesting space too. But I think that contributes to what you're talking about, is that there's a fear. I think that fear has always been there. I think people have that fear. They're hesitant. Has to do with confidence, has to do with all of that. But I mean, what I would say is that I'll use an analogy. My son, when he started playing basketball, he was probably 6, and, you know, shooting a basketball at a rim, that's a challenge. Like, the high score of the games were like 8 or 10 points, right? So it's the games that are very, very hard to watch as a parent, because the kids are just learning. They don't know how to shoot right. They, you know, it's like they don't know how to shoot. They don't know what end of the court they're supposed to go to. And then they switch at halftime and then they're going the other end. So it's like mass chaos to watch a kid's basketball game. And I remember my son, he took the ball and he like alley-ooped it up the basket. And I'm like, well, you're going to miss any shot that you don't take, right? So you can take the shot any way you want. That shot didn't go in, but it's not going to go in unless you try it. And so I think there's a, and the analogy is that, like, why not have the conversation? Why not ask the business consultant to come to your podcast and talk about this? Why not go ask a president of a bank for an internship if you want it? Like, what's the worst that they can happen? They say no. Yeah, no is going to happen in life. The other thing about being an entrepreneur too and being a business owner or getting to any business is that it's not all icing on the cake. It's not. You're going to get some no's, especially when you get into sales and you try to sell something. Selling is hard because you're not just selling your product, you're selling yourself. And then we start to like take it as a personal rejection and say no. I always look at no as kind of the beginning of the conversation, right? Like if you go to a bank, to the president of the bank and say, I'm a college student. I don't have the experience. I'd really like to learn more about working at a bank. Can you help me? And they might say, no, I can't right now because I have too much going on. But who do you think they're going to call when they do have an opportunity, right? So it's all about, I think there's a, it's not about networking to get things. It's about networking to build relationships. And really that's key to it. Because building relationships, that's where business opportunities come. That's where opportunities for internships, opportunities for sales, opportunities for everything comes from business relationships. Because we buy on trust. And if you don't go to the bank and ask the person for an internship, somebody else is going to do that. And they're going to be remembered. So that's kind of what I think about, like, yeah, we all have fear. Are we going to get rejection? Probably. Yeah, we probably are. But you know what? You're probably going to get it again, but someone's going to say yes. So that's kind of where to think about it too. Give you another example. When my first part of my business that I launched was, it's called the Thriving Entrepreneur Program, which helps you, you know, here's the blueprint for being a thriving entrepreneur. It had to do with your communication, had to do with your mindset, had to do with all these things. So I have a lot of competition. There's a lot of coaches out there that do that. I was entering a space where it was already flooded with people. I was paying a lead generation agency. Do you know what that is? So paying somebody to book calls for me and of entrepreneurs that were just starting their business so we could talk about how to go from a business to a thriving business. And I would get these calls. I probably had 60 calls and I had no every single time. But I kept trying because I'm like, somebody's going to say yes. But then I was like, after I had 60 calls, I was like, maybe I should think about what I'm offering. And maybe I need to be more specific about what I'm offering, that there's a million coaches out there, particularly in the post-COVID area. There's a million coaches out there that are trying to help businesses get better because a lot of people lost their jobs. So when I kind of step back and became much more focused on it, where I help consultants develop their branded consulting empire, that became a much more attractive value proposition than the thriving entrepreneur. And then I almost immediately started to get conversions in my sales conversations because I was being more specific. I had a lot of no's before I got any yes's, but it, you know, then you just have to learn. And, you know, yeah, it was fearful going into conversations and thinking, I'm probably going to get a no, but I'm going to learn something from it. And the lesson I learned from that is that it's that you got to be really specific on the problem that you solve when you go into those sales conversations. But it took a lot of no's to get there. So.
Yeah. When it comes to failure along the way, I think that is the biggest step to growth. And I mean, you really can't grow unless you, my philosophy is kind of like riding a bike. You're not going to be the best fucking rider of a bike from the get-go unless you're somehow that talented or that good. But the majority fall and they get hurt and they realize they have to wear knee pads, or they have to prevent that, or understand that I don't want to fall and I have to learn from this. So it's that aspect of learning and going through it. For you mentioned previously with kids and their retention and with it coming to technology, how we're not interacting. I'm reading a book called The Anxious Generation, and it actually is talking about my generation a little bit farther back, right before 9/11, and they, you know, or even just like right that being the point where things changed and shifted. I wasn't around, but in the idea that it wasn't just this scariness of the world being harder or scarier, it's the fact that we give a cell phone to 4-year-olds. How can that help a 4-year-old? They're still trying to process everything around them, and we want to give them the world access. I feel like that would be at a 4-year-old level. I was playing with Legos at 4, and yeah. I got frustrated not putting a Lego set together. I couldn't imagine if I was given a cell phone at 4 years old just to preoccupy me. I feel like I'd be so overwhelmed by it. So I don't know. What is your take from your perspective on like technology and how we're just essentially using technology as a way to give it to someone, and then they're going to just, or give it as a preoccupier of something as to a facilitator?
Right. I think there's got to be a lot of boundaries put around things when you introduce new things, especially to kids. And I am not an expert parent. I am a parent, but there are many parents out there that have many different views. But what I'll tell you about when I decided to get my daughter a cell phone. My daughter was traveling and it was a way to communicate. And not that I got it for her because all of her friends have it. And, you know, but all of her friends do have it. That's how they communicate. And so it was hard because she was being kind of left out of things, but it was also a way that I could keep in touch with her, you know, when she was walking home from school, or now she's in middle school, you know. So it was like there was a process that I went through for that to be able to do that. But you've got to, just like anything, you've got to teach respectable boundaries around that. And that's like not having, I don't want her not have social media on our phone. And I have control over that, because I think social media is a rabbit hole that's really hard to get out of. And I'm a business owner, so I'm on social media all the time, and it drives me crazy. And I catch myself scrolling and I'm like, what am I doing? And I'm an adult. And so I can only imagine the attractiveness of this for kids. I think I just listened to a podcast interview with the writer of The Anxious Generation, and he talks about not allowing cell phones until you're in high school, which that's completely valid. But in my perspective, you can do that. I've always been if you ban it, they're going to want it and it's going to create tension. But if you can introduce it and you have boundaries around it and you maintain those boundaries, then that makes much more sense. And I think the same is true. I mean, the same is true for education and teaching. My husband's a middle school teacher and my best friend is a first grade teacher. Like, you've got to have boundaries to be able to make things function. And I think that's true in any technology or any space, you know what I mean? So I think that's important. And there are different limitations for that. So, and there's not one answer to it either. So.
Yeah, when it comes to other students at universities, I find that we often all get sucked into the world of technology and we let it control us to a degree. And like, I see opportunity where I can, and I'll do that, but I look and see others maybe not doing that. Where do you think that the college or colleges aren't? What do you think the college's job is for a student by the time they leave college?
As a business owner and in being in the business world, it is not impossible to prepare people to enter that, but it is, it's, you're not going to 100% prepare this generation for getting into school or getting into a business, because so much of it is experiential and actually doing it. I've been teaching public speaking for 25 years, and I can talk to you until you're blue, until I'm blue in the face about what a perfect speech is and exactly how to put it together. And I can give you all the answers that you need. And you know, this is what college is for. It introduces you to ideas and theories, and you have all of this knowledge at your arsenal when you go into the world to start to solve problems on your own. So it's you're not gonna know it or understand it until you really, I mean, you'll understand it, but you won't understand the importance of it until you actually engage it. And so, like, teaching public speaking, I give people an outline to fill in. Like, fill in this outline, make it your own, and then give your speech, because there is a difference between writing it and giving it. And the same thing is true in college. Like, you could write it, take your tests, write your paper, do whatever, but then when you actually take that theory or that idea and put it into your, it's knowledge that you use to solve problems at work. It's hard to describe that. So you ask, how can colleges prepare? I think there is an adaptation in the learning style. I think there's got to be some movement or some pivoting in the way that we teach and can teach information to the consumers that are having the information. So Sam and I were talking about this the other day. Like, nobody's on a desktop anymore. No one does work at a desktop anymore. Very few people do. Where do we do all of our work? On our phones. And where do we read things? On our phones. So why am I putting all this work into putting together a website if it's not an app or it's not a whatever? You know, it's like we have to think about how we consume information and what's the best way to adapt to the audience. And I think there's got to be, you know, and this is not an easy thing. This is very idealistic type of discussion, but it's like, we've got to be able to adapt to that, but we've also got to be able to encourage students in your generation to think differently and to think without using this and to create conclusions without going to the Google machine and typing in an answer, right? And we've got, it's a two-way street. So yes, there should be some things that should change about the way that we're articulating information, but there's also got to be some adaptability in your generation to be able to be like, yeah, writing paper sucks, but what it's teaching me is to consolidate information in a way that's unique and it's mine and it's personal. Like, it's all my worldview experience that's creating these new conclusions. So it's recognizing the value in that. So I think it's the education environment changing, but I also think it's that your generation's got to be a little bit more resilient, because not everything's going to be spoon-fed to them. You know what I mean? And you definitely learn that in business, that you either perform or you're out. So, you know, that's just the reality of where we're going. And I think the more competitive that this world gets, we got to develop some thick skin around that. And I think that's on your generation too. So I think it's a two-way street, I believe.
Certainly. And that two-way street I've kind of learned on my own, to where, like, I'll see a problem, or for instance, I covered the election as a photojournalist. I'm one of the only photojournalists that I know that went all around PA and drove around it. And not only did I get into these events, but I got in with a press pass and was able to cover all this. And all it took was three phone calls. Literally, I sat here at this desk and I was like, what the heck? Why not? And I made one phone call, and then that got me to another person, and they gave me another phone call. And by the end of it, I was able to go, and I was like, this was way too easy. Is it just that no one did it? Or it's just a strange thing that, like, being able to see a solution or make a solution and just follow through, even though it might scare the ever-living hell out of you.
Well, and that's you kind of taking a chance and asking questions. And if you get no, you get no. If you get no, then maybe it can be like, well, I'm a college student. You could let me in, you know? So not that, I mean, no means no, but, you know, in certain situations, why not take a shot? Why not alley-oop a basketball up and, I mean, you're not going to, you make every shot you don't make every shot that you take, but you don't make shots that you don't take.
Or paralysis by analysis, and then you think about all the shots you could take, but you don't act on them.
Yep.
That, you know, it's such a strange, just a strange thing, because, like, I will look to others and I'll try to find and get other people interested in, like, hey, this is what I'm doing. What are you doing? And it's that there's a disconnect. Do you know where that might be falling from, like, a business perspective, interacting with my generation, where that disconnect is? Because, like, I'll be doing all these things and I'll be talking with another person, and it's kind of hard to, like, I don't see as many aspirations in my generation. Do you know where that might be coming from?
I don't. And I think that's a good question for you to think about, too, because it's your generation. So what is not, you know, and, you know, the what's the phrase? The cream is always going to rise to the top, right? Like the people that are doing shit and that are motivated are going to do well. They're going to get the A's. They're going to get the job. They are. They're going to get the job that they want because they know how to ask for it. And they know how to, and if they don't know how to ask for it, they're going to go hang out with people until they figure it out the right way to communicate. That's always going to happen. We're a capitalist society. That's always going to happen. But the interesting thing for me, and this is a question I have for you, is do you feel, and I think this is a little COVID inspired too, because when COVID happened, I had a pre-kindergartner. I have a 4-year-old. And talk about I'm not a preschool teacher. I didn't want my kids in the house. I wanted them at school. And so that was, like, really challenging for me to have them at home and to teach them at home and do my other job and do all that. You know, it is what it is. But I think I feel like the COVID generation, or at least when COVID happened, we put a bubble around people. And I feel like there was this bubble that happened, and then there was this infallibility that happened, and we didn't want people to get sick or be harmed and all of that. And I feel like that kind of influenced the way that your generation might be perceiving challenge or fear. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I've always had a look at the world from a photojournalist perspective without realizing I was. And, like, I picked up a camera, and that's when I really got into photography. I had my camera, and I went to these abandoned places around PA when no one really gave a shit, and I just went and photographed them. And it really gave me, it was kind of staking the fire that I didn't know I was staking. It's where I was like, well, I like what I'm doing. I like this after effect, even though maybe I was overriding these images. I was still learning and experiencing. And instead of, I know a lot of people were inside and they didn't go out. They didn't explore things because I know a lot of people, some friends at the time, used the excuse, well, you know, everyone says I can't go outside. I can't go to parties. So that's what my life revolves around. So I'm not going to go and make an effort to do something else, because it was irregular. Everyone was just thrown off. I was thrown off by it. But what I did is I took my feelings and everything that I was going through, and I said, I'm going to channel that into my camera, and I'm going to show the world the way I want to see it, to where, like, even my phone camera, I have videos of, you know, I'm just doing, like, stand-up comedy where it's like, where'd all the tissues go? I didn't know we were that bad. Or, like, things like that, to where you gotta have some fun in it, because sitting in a dire time like COVID is only going to make your depression and everything else on top of that worse. So the way I looked at it is I kind of took it from like a different perspective of like, wait, let's go, you know, for the hell of it, let's go to New Jersey and go in the middle of nowhere and take some photos of this huge, aqueduct. It's an aqueduct that's abandoned. And you go on the top of it and it's like all the way up in the air and it's middle of nowhere, New Jersey. And we just went there. I found it, picked it. We went and it was just such a, there's a resilience in it to being able to just keep going and doing, even though outside in the real world, it's like everything has gone to hell. You can't have fun. You can't go. You have to make your own food. You have to do a lot of things yourself. And I think it really did for me. It rekindled like that aspect of like, oh, I have to make this my own. I have to have, there has to be something in this. There's a meaning behind this, and it's not just sit here and play video games all day or sit here and watch TV or social media all day. Because when we sit in front of the TV, I mean, the way I look at it, it's like throwing someone in front of the TV and they never move from that spot. Nothing gets done. Nobody learned. You don't learn anything because it's the same repeat. Television's great. Don't get me wrong. But television is only as good in small doses. There's a small amount. Like if you can, like for every fun show I watch a show that makes me think outside the box. Like I just picked up Severance. Oh my gosh, it's so good. I can't wait for the right now. Season finale is Friday, if I'm correct. So I'm so excited for that. But it's like what COVID did for me was it really taught me a lesson in not succumbing to everything falling on us, but instead saying, well, everything does seem like it's like getting out of a broken down house and not just crying because it's all broken, but saying, well, we have to see that something beautiful in this, finding the resemblance of what we want the world to be and having, there's a beauty in it. There's a beauty in COVID. I really do believe that there was everyone had a choice to renew themselves to where there was no New Year's resolution bullshit. It was, you have to be willing to put that work in and you will see the result on the other side, but you have to put that work in to see that result, to where I learned a lot. I had some hard failures and learned the hard way, but I met some really cool people along the time and I learned a lot and I did a lot of my photography. If I wouldn't have done that then, I wouldn't be where I'm at now because I can still remember that time that I had and went out and photographed, brought a friend with me, didn't bring a friend with me. I did it all on my own and I still do that. It just translated to photojournalism, where the only difference was the place, the time, and how scary things were because I wasn't alone. I was alone in a space that was going to have a lot of emotion and I'm going to have to contain that and still be able to document it and compartmentalize it in my own head. I didn't know that was going to happen, but it prepared me so I prepared myself. But I think my generation should be able to like stand on their own two feet.
I don't think that's very common. So in your generation or any generation, I think it happened to my generation too, that we're like, this sucks. Everything around us just sucks. I can't go to work. I can't go to my favorite coffee shop. I have to drive through if I want to do anything. There's no toilet paper at a grocery store. Like, it is all a matter of perspective. It is unique that you have that perspective. But overall, I don't think your generation has that. And how do we flip the switch and help people be a little bit more optimistic?
Yeah,
because you found an outlet. And I think it's amazing that you found an outlet. And that's something, because you needed an outlet. And you're so creative. You're an entrepreneur at heart. I don't know if you know that, but you are. Because you're creative. When you get in the space after school, whether or not you're an entrepreneur or whenever you decide to do that, you'll realize that there are creators and there's implementers. And the sooner you kind of realize where you thrive the most, whether you're a creator or you like the processes and figuring out how to get things done and put the processes together. As soon as you figure that out and you start to grasp onto that, that's when you can really start to make a difference in your own business and in your own leadership, really. But that's just something to matter that or just not even that. But I think the COVID had such an impact. You know, in that book, your book that you're reading, The Anxious Generation, one of the most important, I list the armchair expert. That's more my generation thing, but Dax Shepard does it. It's really good. And he interviews this guy. And one of the most important things that comes out of that interview is that kids don't play anymore. They don't. And I think that is... They don't go out in the playground and get dirty, and they don't play games together, and they don't, you know, their interaction is here. It's not. And they don't, when you don't play and you don't interact, it's really, those are like soft skills that become the currency of today. And when you don't play and socialize and interact, that's really where it is. You know, I listening to that book and listening to the reactions to it, it's like my kids for sure are constantly interacting because I have them in activities. They do sports, they do all these things, and they play at the playground, and I make them get off their technology. I don't think that's happening enough because that's where, like, you think about the last time you had really good customer service, like at a coffee shop or at a restaurant. That happens. You have good customer service when there's good communication, and you don't learn good communication unless you do it. And if we're not playing together, and we're not socializing, and we're not in groups, and we're not communicating or understanding how other people communicate, that's a challenge.
Oh, I 100% agree. And you mentioned the idea of like these practical skills, because these children have to learn them the hard way on the playground in the experience. And so I have a buddy of mine that works at a plant, and he built coolers, and he ran into a guy and he's like, okay, I need you to do this. Can you hand me the wrench? What's a wrench? What's a wrench? The thing that you... No? Oh, that's a wrench. And it's like, you know, there are some instances where we are almost hindering not just people, but like, whether it be siblings or others. I don't know necessarily if it's a society fault, but it's a matter of, from my perspective, I look at it and I'm like, how are we having people that don't know what a wrench is? You know, they're working at a plant, and they don't have common sense. It's just like, I wouldn't even call it street smarts. And it's where that's my frustration, because I worked at a summer camp, and some of these kids are freaking bright. Holy crap, these kids are smart, because you can learn so much from them. And like, I learned a lot about like how to deal with self-deprecating. Yes, thank you. I learned a lot about that, to where, you know, kids have this very interesting way of not just reassuring themselves, but kind of working through these difficult emotions without having to be on electronics. You know, I think, you know, I did a paper when I was younger on the problem with technology, and it's the idea that we would, in it, we would far avoid an uncomfortable confrontation at a coffee house because we talked to someone the wrong way by looking at our phone than actually experiencing that guilty feeling of like, oh, I fucked up this conversation. And I have to sit here and feel that. But I think the ability to avoid these experiences is certainly shaping not just my generation, but even generations that didn't have it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's scary. It's flipping scary, because you know, I like to say I have a creative mind and I like looking at things creatively, but also like constructively, to where, you know, things compound on each other. And in the same way as good is good, good compound is good, but bad compound can also compound. So it's like these ideas that they can build, but if we continue to have, you know, meaningless conversations or lack thereof, where, you know, one thing that I've done with my fiance more is as I've gone out to eat less, one of the things I do is I put my phone all the way where the napkin holder is and I don't touch it, and I make sure I don't touch it, and I make it a habit of that, because when I do that, I've started to notice everyone else around the restaurant's usually on their phone. And it's like sitting in a restaurant that's really nice and everyone's on their phone, but they're not talking to each other, is a weird feeling in terms of like, this is, it's like a sterile feeling where it's like almost inauthentic. Even though we have these cell phones where we can contact anyone anywhere, we can't talk to the person in front of us.
Right. And I think that's not a new problem. That's a problem that's always been around, but I think it's exacerbated by some of the events that have happened in the past 5 years, COVID in particular, and the rise of technology. And you were talking about how the wrench analogy. And I thought, what if you asked your grandparents to use ChatGPT, right? So there's the same like generational, you know, like it's a tool. And as we treat it as a tool and we educate others, then that's kind of where we can break down that barrier. So
that, you know, I think we should be moving towards breaking down barriers, because I think a lot of things in it's mainstream media versus unconventional media that we don't often take in. It's like, oh, well, that makes sense. But what I've learned is when I usually say I that makes sense to me, it might need to be like put down into like a little bit more of a consumable manner, that way everyone can take it in and understand it. And it's such a unique way of looking. Like, I looked at things and I'm saying, oh yeah, that makes sense. And but I still ask questions, because I always want to learn more, because I think that's one thing that you never stop doing. You never stop learning. That, what is it? Never stop eating, learning, and aging.
Can't stop any of those.
Well, you can try. I just hope that things get better in the long run in terms of like society that, you know, in the current world America's in, and as we approach, I'm approaching graduation, so I'm, you know, it's gonna be, what, right now it's March 19th, so I have about less than a month, literally, what, the 26th of April I graduate. So about a month away, and it is approaching fast and slow. Fast when I don't want it to, slow when I don't want it to.
A piece of advice for all you college students out there, think about the relationships that you've made in college and think about what those relationships can do after college. It's not just what you're doing now, it's the potential you have for future. And that's with your friends, and that's with your professors.
Would you say that, are you still friends with some people that you met in your freshman year of college?
I am. And I think, sorry, my son just got home from school with his group of boys. Yeah, I am. And, you know, I feel very fortunate about my college experience, because I had an immediate team, right? Like, I went for college debates, and then I had, we weren't all friends, but we knew each other. We had an immediate identity. I think that's a really, really challenging thing about school, is that you don't have that identity, and like you're starting something new, and then maybe you gravitate towards a major. Maybe after your freshman year, maybe you stop that early and then your identity changes. So I think that's kind of the big thing. So yes, I am still friends with them. That doesn't mean I talk to them every day, but we do still know each other and we do still talk to each other. It's been fun to see our professional lives develop. So yes, I have friends from high school. I also grew up in a very small town. So I have friends from when I was in the first grade. So it's a, you know, it's a, it's all about relationships, because you never know what is, you know, you never know what opportunities are going to avail themselves. So you don't. And say yes more often than you say no, because nothing fun happens when you say no.
Although I agree, but I counter with you should know when to say no.
100%. I could say, I should qualify that. You shouldn't always say yes to everything. Like, you got to be careful about who you're with and whatever. But, like, if you have an opportunity to do something or go somewhere or have a business contact, or somebody says, hey, you want to go to this thing with me this afternoon? It's out of business. Don't say no. Say yes. Or how many entrepreneurs have been around that just don't really want to go to business functions? And they don't want to, you know, that a lot. It gets exhausting to network. But if you don't, some of the most amazing relationships can come out of just where you say yes. So
I support that. And I should have asked you the first question that I need to ask everyone is, what is your preferred way of, what is your, how do you get your caffeine? Or are you an anti-caffeine?
Oh, I'm not an anti-caffeine. I worked for Starbucks for a lot of years. Starbucks had great health benefits. So.
Okay, well,
I really enjoyed it. It was a very fast-moving job. I loved it. So, yes, I'm kind of a black coffee drinker. I like Americanos. That's kind of what I like. So,
are you only Starbucks, or are you?
Oh, I'm not that anymore. I'm a local girl now.
Okay. So, what made you switch?
I like the, this is interesting because it's kind of the business too. I want to support local entrepreneurs, and I think there's a different, and this is totally an unqualified statement, so don't quote me on it, but I think there's a difference between small batch roasting and enormous batch roasting. And I think there's a big difference, and there's a Stumptown coffee, I love it. And it's a small batch. And yes, it's all, but it's not like a Starbucks. There's a big difference because it has everything to do with the flavor. So
thank you. You're the only one that has made that argument too, but I make the same argument. At least I didn't know it was called small batch, large batch. What I always know
is, I don't know. I kind of made that up. So, but that's cool. I think there's a difference in it.
Oh, no, certainly. And I used to be a Starbucks drinker until I only knew their taste. And then I went to a local coffee house and I was like, what is this? This taste? Oh, that's flavor, because they don't burn the beans. What I've learned about Starbucks is what ends up happening is, since they are commercially producing all of this to everyone, they don't have to worry about the roast times on the beans. So they just burn them. And that is your signature Starbucks taste that we all love and know.
Well, that's why they put so much crap in it. So you cover up the taste of it all. And I just like the taste of espresso, but I like the taste of good espresso.
Yeah, no, I just got my first coffee maker, and I go to the one out here. It's right down 51, and it's, what is it? Oh my gosh, I should know the name of it. It's down 51, and it is one of the best damn coffee places, because it's owned by two women and I can support them in a local, and it's so cool. Everything down, the way they organize everything, and they use a good syrup, not the I wouldn't say fake, but it's okay. But it is such a good place. Like, I learned a thing that I do whenever I want to chill out after a long day of work. I put my phone in the other room and I sit down, I play some jazz, and I make myself some coffee. It is the most peaceful way to, like, reset.
Yeah. It's, you gotta take time for yourself too.
I think that's really where we can like end it there at, I think, reset it, like being able to take time to yourself, because I think that as just any professional, I think there needs to be a time to just relax, not have a time when things are going 1,000 miles an hour.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, I have not a visitor. My cat just walked in the room.
Well, you know, I really think that there's a huge matter of, you know, I'm a creative and I, oh my gosh, the amount of things that run through my head on a daily basis, but being able to like take some time and like not let things overwhelm. How do you not let things overwhelm you?
Time block. You know what that is? I set aside time for work. I set aside time for my kids. I set aside time for my family. I set aside, this does not work every night because I have kids that are in activities, but I set aside time to cook dinner and to sit down and to go. I need to go to the gym. And so if I don't work that into my schedule like 3 or 4 times a week, so you got a time block. And I think as a college student, it's hard because you have so much to do and everybody's working and then you procrastinate and then your work ends up being shitty. And, you know, the same thing happens with entrepreneurs. You got to give yourself time to do it. But it's prioritizing. It's also putting this guy down and having some conversations.
I fully support that.
And you know, this podcast is to talk about what you're going to do to get a job. I think one of the most important things for your generation to do, this is anybody, is find a mentor that you trust. And the mentor relationship can often lead you to some opportunities that you're going to know about. So when I started my business, I didn't seek a mentor right away. And I think I probably could have helped me. So think about that.
Yeah. Mentorship is, I encourage any college student or even just high school student, if they are willing to, like, seek out a mentor, seek out someone that you can go to and talk to. Cause like I had one for a while. I've switched around. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm just a one mentor person. I go to all different types of people. And I think that is when you have a different perspective at someone that has done maybe what you want to do, it's a good feeling to know that you're in the right direction or you're going in the right direction. Cause you know, it's kind of hard to guide. Once you know how to ride a bike, you still need to know where you're going and how fast you want to go. And a mentor is kind of like the person that kind of says, hey, you know, don't go too fast. Don't go too slow. This is where you want to go. You want to go over there. When you don't have that, it's kind of scary. And I can understand that. I'm sure we all can.
Yes, absolutely.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share with everyone? Socials?
I'm happy to get all that info to you. I'm Shelby Jo Long on LinkedIn, on Facebook. You can find me. My podcast is called the Genius Entrepreneur Podcast. You can find that on YouTube, and I have some of the episodes up on Spotify and all the streaming platforms. My book is called I See Your Genius, Transform Your Idea into Income. And which is all about taking your expertise and entering it into the marketplace in any way that you can. I'm happy to give you the link for that. You can find that on Amazon. And love to connect. I like business. I like talking business. So,
yeah. Thanks again for coming on. And yeah, this will be out probably the following Friday at 2 p.m. This Friday or next Friday at 2 p.m. And if you're interested in coming on, please reach out. I'll probably reach out to you, all y'all guys. And if find us wherever you get your podcasts, except for MySpace, because I had one, don't use it anymore. And if you want to appear, reach out to me on social media at Cafe Connect Pod on Instagram. And I still have to get the other things. Discord server coming soon. And otherwise, email me if you're an email person, contact@mcc-cal.com. Now, take care of yourselves and take it easy.
Cool.
And.